shoots, and Swans have won the grand final.
Spills out to Horsley. What a goal!
For an inside look at the state's biggest footy league, it's the Monday Waffle.
G'day and welcome for another episode of the Monday Waffle. You're going to be joined by me, James Broadhurst, and me, James Broadhurst. Everyone else is out on placements in Europe having either a great time or trying to figure out how to log into a platform that they've never used. But never fear, I'm here to guide you through all of the Round 11 action. We are coming into another round that was affected by the bye, so there's a couple of teams, four in total, that weren't playing the round, and it was a big weekend of local footy across the WAFL, the WAFLW, and even the under-18s and 16s. The West Australian side squared off against South Australia at Mineral Resources Park and even at Optus Stadium, which is great to see. We're going to be kicking things off by breaking down all of the Round 11 action, starting with the game between Claremont and West Coast Eagles. They got done in the AFL by a huge margin, and they also got done in the Waffle by a huge margin. Claremont coming out on top, 22 goals, 15, 147, defeating West Coast, 8 goals, 8, 56 at Revo Fitness Stadium. Claremont, really great start, kicking 6 goals to 1 in the opening term. Managed to keep the pressure and intent up, kicking 13 goals, 9 to 5 goals, 4 in the second half. So similar to what happened in the AFL, they just found a way to keep up that momentum and also to keep things ticking over nicely. The score was really reflective of Claremont's dominance around the ground, nearly double the inside 50 count compared to the West Coast Eagles. For Claremont, Callan England was brilliant, 28 touches and 2 goals. And Jai Bolton, just strap a ball magnet to him and set him on the oval. Call him Mr. Accumulator, 42 touches. I guess 40 is the new 30 in the AFL and the Waffle as well. We had Treacy and Talon both with 4 goals each. For West Coast, you had Joshua Burke kicking 3 of their 8 goals, and Zane True and Jackson Nelson both with 30-plus touches as well. So another big loss for the West Coast Waffle side. Every time that they don't win, they are getting statistically closer to their first win. So I reckon they might even be in with the chance this week. I'm gonna back them, but we'll be recapping the round to come shortly. So stick around here on the Monday Waffle. Coming up, we're going to be breaking down the East Perth and Perth game at Leaderville Oval. It was another one-sided affair, finishing 23 goals 8 to the Royals and defeating Perth with 5 goals 6, 36. The Royals were really punishing an underperforming Perth side. East Perth with more multiple goal kickers than Perth had goals. Anytime that happens, you're in for a massive win or loss, depending on which side you're on. And also the Royals were super efficient, just averaging 16 touches or 16 disposals per goal, which is pretty impressive. Hamish Brayshaw was massive, 38 touches, 2 goals and 7 inside 50s. Perth, they just really struggled to find the footy. Only 2 players with more than 20 touches. And the massive win for the Royals actually puts them into second on the ladder with a huge percentage boost from this win on the weekend. So that is something to cherish. The teams on the bye for round 11 were Peel Thunder, East Fremantle, South Rio, and also Subiaco. The game of the week that we chose to feature this week was probably the pick of the round. Obviously, with 3 games, we had less chance of screwing it up this week. West Perth lost to the Swan Districts, 8 goals 9, 57 to 11 goals 6, 76 at Pentanet Stadium. Decent crowd in for the game with over 2,000 through the gates. Crowd numbers have been down around the 1,700 mark, so great to see supporters and fans getting out to support their local clubs on a weekend where at least one of the AFL sides didn't do particularly well. West Perth looking for redemption after a loss to Subi last week, and the Black Ducks true to form with another fast start, kicking 4 goals to 1 in the first quarter. I'm sure they and also their fan base would have been pretty nervous. There's been a number of games this season where they've started quick out of the gates and just not been able to sustain their effort. Warning signs and alarm bells would have been ringing close to three-quarter time, with the Falcons reining in the deficit to less than two goals by three-quarter time. I'm sure the Swan Districts were, and the coaching staff, are probably getting a little bit nervous and getting a feeling of deja vu. The Swan Districts holding on for a 15-point win. They've lost a lot of close ones this year. So one of our fellow Waffle podcasters, Asher Gibbon, will be very happy, a lady this week. Accuracy in front of goal. The game might have unfolded differently if the Falcons kick straight. Nine behinds to the Swan District's six. So, you know, they had this pretty similar number of scoring shots, but accuracy is really what cost them. Also celebrating a huge milestone this week for Aaron Black in game number 250. A couple of goals, 20 touches, not enough to get his team over the line, and also reported for good measure. You can't say that he didn't want to be there. You know, 20 touches, two goals, and being on report, that's definitely a memorable 250th, that's for sure. Swan District's Braden Noble, a strong target, kicking three goals, and Clark and Pina getting 30 touches each as well. Having a look at ladder chat after the round unfolded, we can see that Claremont is now sitting top of the table. These three sides, Claremont, East Perth and Subiaco, all sitting on equal points. The only thing separating them is percentage. Claremont have won four of their last five. East Perth has returned to their winning form from the beginning of the 2023 season. Five wins in a row, which is very, very impressive. And also Subi have won four of their last five as well. So they're the form teams in the comp, and I think they're cementing their positions and their final prospects over the next couple of weeks. Then we have Peel Thunder, East Fremantle and West Perth kind of making up the midfield, I guess you'd call it, on 28, 26 or 24 and 20 points respectively. Not a lot separating from fourth until sixth. So that fifth and sixth spot is really going to be decided right up into the very end of the season. You wouldn't think that Swan Districts or South Fremantle, given their current form, are going to find a way to really contest the form teams in the competition, but anything can happen. I think East Fremantle, it's kind of theirs to lose. I think that they could and they should be in the top five by the end of the season, but given how hot and cold they have been in recent times, anything's going to happen. So we've got Peel Thunder in fourth, East Fremantle in fifth, West Perth in sixth, and then we've got the Swan Districts after that win. They're back in position number seven. We've got South Fremantle on 8 points and Perth as well on 8 points. And we have West Coast right down the bottom on 0 points. Looking ahead to round 11, we've got Peel Thunder versus South Frio at Lane Group Stadium for the first game of the round. Both teams are coming off a bye. South Frio could pull off an upset, but they'll be up against it. Historical wins in favour of the Bulldogs, but Peel have been playing some really good footy lately especially, and Peel have been finding ways to score. So South Frio's defence will be key. If the Bulldogs can keep the Thunder to 10 goals or less, I reckon they're going to be in with a chance. When sides don't kick a lot of goals or 10 or less, the opposition tends to be around in a position where they might be able to take out the win. So I think if South Frio's defensive unit, so going to be looking towards Toby McWilkin to get that run and carry off half back, I reckon if they can do the job down back, then I reckon they're going to find enough momentum and potentially find a way to score in a way that could threaten Peel Thunder and come away with the win. Peel Thunder, I think the key for them is just going to be consistency. I reckon their best four quarters of footy is probably better than South Fremantle. So I think that if Peel Thunder plays a consistent game for four full quarters, I reckon they're probably going to come away with the win. Moving on to East Fremantle versus West Coast at the Wacker. West Coast looking for their first win of the season. And in all honesty, if they were going to win any game, I reckon this might be the one to do it. East Fremantle looking for another win to firm up their place in the top five. The Sharks have been good and bad at times throughout the season. So for West Coast, maybe, just maybe, a little bit of motivation, couple of decisions go their way, they hit the ground, couple of their more junior players kind of step up. It's not necessarily about the best of the Eagles doing well. I actually think it's about the bottom six or eight players taking that next step up. We've seen it a lot of times in the senior league where it's not necessarily about the best players that you have on the pitch, but it's about your mid-tier and your lower-tier players being able to get the job done. So I think maybe, just maybe, I really want to see a win on the board for West Coast. They've been copping a lot of flack in the media. Their fans are not happy and probably rightly so. But I just want a little bit of positivity for West Coast. That's all I want to see. So with that being said, we've also got West Perth, East Perth, Swan Districts and Perth participating in the bye this round. And for the game of the week, it is going to be a huge matchup between Claremont and Subi. Very, very excited for this one. First versus third on the ladder. Not much separating either side. Both teams have won two of the last four matchups, and Claremont coming off a big win last week and Subi coming off the bye. I reckon this is going to be local Saturday afternoon waffle footy at its best. Hopefully the forecast is for some nice clear and sunny weather or even just cool. It'd be great to see a couple of thousand people down at Revo Fitness Stadium cheering on their sides. I reckon it's going to be a really great contest. I think it's probably going to be one of the highlights for the waffle, especially with the extended bye programming that seems to be carrying on a lot longer than what most of us are used to. So that wraps up round 11 with our game of the week here for the Monday waffle, being Claremont versus Subiaco. A quick little waffle W update as well. West Perth were defeated by Subiaco, 0-1 to 5-7. Another goalless side in the next game. East Perth was defeated by Claremont, 0-2 to 6-5, 41. And another goalless side, Peel Thunder, 0-0, defeated by East Fremantle, 8-10, 58. Peel, maybe a little bit superstitious, their official crowd attendance for this game was 666. I think either East Fremantle was possessed or maybe the ball was possessed and just didn't want to go through the Peel Thunder big sticks down either end of the ground. You know, it's not great to see three sides in the Premier Women's competition not being able to score a goal, but that's the way that the cookie has crumbled. And the Swan Districts were defeated by South Fremantle, 2-5, 17 to 3-2, 20. In other Waffle W news, the grand final venue has been set. It's going to be Mineral Resources Park on Saturday, the 15th of July. So definitely mark that date in your calendars if you're keen on checking out the best of the best from the Waffle W competition. Just a pretty quick potty today, just with me, myself and I running through a couple of the results and some talking points for the week ahead. We are talking about the final siren. So we are talking about just a few thoughts, a few points, just to stimulate a little bit of conversation, hopefully. I just wanted to touch on quickly both the under-18s and under-16s Western Australian side combated with South Australia over the weekend. The under-18s emerged victorious, 10-10, 70, defeating South Australia 6-6, 42 at Optus Stadium. And the under-16s defeated South Australia 9-11, 65 to 7-18, 60. That is a huge number of behinds. You can't say that they weren't getting the ball down there, that's for sure. But great to see both the underage sides, the under-18s and the under-16s, taking out national honours for WA. Last week on the Monday Waffle podcast, we also did have a conversation around Barry Cable. For those of you who haven't been keeping up with what's been going on, Barry Cable has been found liable of a civil lawsuit that was brought against him. This means that he is liable to be paying upwards of $800,000 or something similar for, in terms of compensation, to provide, alleged sexual assault, if And it's not a great topic to have to discuss in sport, but the follow-on from that was the questions around the recognition that Barry Cable received throughout a number of sporting bodies, not only here in WA, but also over in Victoria as well. We have had some progress since we spoke to you last. The WA Institute of Sport has removed Cable's WA Hall of Champions honours, and shortly after, the WA Footy Commission also revoked Cable's West Australian Football Hall of Fame membership legend status and his life membership as well. We are expecting the AFL Commission to meet this week. After the Barry Cable situation unfolded, what we've seen is that the AFL and a lot of the governing bodies that had Barry Cable in a position of recognition have gone back to their sort of corporate governance structures and reviewed what action can be taken. And this means that they've put clauses into several, whether it's a board or appointees, and they've put in place mechanisms that allow them to either revoke or strip away these awards and honorary positions from various organisations. So it should be noted that Barry Cable still has Hall of Fame status with North Melbourne too. This took a lot of, not, it didn't take people by surprise, but I think in terms of corporate governance, this was really worst case scenario. I think this is going to open up a can of worms as to the merit of on-field conduct and off-field conduct. I think the way that you carry yourself on a football field should be reflective of the way that you carry yourself off it. I think that the WA Footy Commission and the Institute of Sport have made the right call. I think in a society where scrutiny of people in high-profile sporting clubs, they essentially become public figures, and you want them to be representing not only the best interests of the club, but the best interests of the sport. I was reflecting on this over the last couple of weeks and thinking about some positive culture change that could actually come from this incident. And perhaps instead of focusing on the negative, what we could look at introducing is something similar to what they have set up in the NFL. I know a lot of it is because of the size and the economies of scale, but just bear with me here. But in the NFL, they've got an award that actually celebrates the most altruistic and the most virtuous players for some of the exploits that they do off the field. So you're talking about things like setting up charity organizations, working closely with local communities. You're talking about charitable organizations and donating their time and presence to benefit those around them. And I'm not saying that we transplant that system directly into the AFL, but in terms of the impact that a system like that could have for the younger players when they arrive at these clubs, if they can actually have someone to look up to and see the positive impact that players can have on their local communities and sporting clubs, then perhaps that would shift the way that they're inducted and the way that they're thinking about their role, not only in the club, but also in society as well. It's a pretty privileged position to be in, to get paid to do the thing that you love, and especially with the amount of money that they do receive in some instances, not all. But in terms of the risks, yes, they're there, and that's part of the reason why they get paid what they do, because they can't do it forever. It's not like me talking into a microphone. I can do this till I'm well into my 70s, and I indeed hope to be doing that. But maybe it's an opportunity to reassess and have a really good long think about the legacy that we want to be leaving behind, not only as players or media personalities or commentators, but maybe it's about trying to have a think about the culture and the institutional changes that we maybe need to make in order to make things more sustainable for the longer term and the next generation. So I think there's merit to it, but you tell me what you think. Hit us up on the Monday Waffle Facebook pages to have a chat around anything and anything that you're seeing on the ground. I think it's important that this is as much for you to get involved as it is for us to get a little bit of experience and provide our thoughts and insight as well. So that's really all we had time here for on the Monday Waffle podcast. I've been waffling on myself for a little bit longer than what I usually do, and I'm not going to lie, my throat is getting a little hoarse. So thank you very much for spending a little bit of time with me here on the Monday Waffle. And until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Monday Waffle, proudly brought to you by the students from ECU Broadcasting.